Hey, deep fried fans, have you ever had deep fried macaroni and cheese? This is truly a deep fried bite and something Keith and Woody tried while they were at the Professional Developers Conference in LA last week. They both give it a thumbs up, by the way. This is Ellie Mae here to announce show number 18 called the Podcaster Roundtable. Speaking of the Professional Developers Conference, this show was recorded live there on October 30th on the expo floor. We're calling this show the Podcaster Roundtable because three podcast shows came together to discuss all of the PDC news. In this episode, we welcome podcasters Jeff Atwood of Stack Overflow and John Galloway, Scott Kuhn, and Kevin Dente of Herding Code. To help cross-pollinate our shows, we're doing something a little unique with this one. We've split this show into two parts. This is the first part you're listening to now. And to get part two of this conversation, head over to Herding Code's website and listen to episode 25. If you are a first-time listener to Deep Fried Bites, welcome. You've just stumbled upon the Internet's best-kept secret. We invite you to stick around, take a load off, and check out additional episodes. Just fire up iTunes or Zune to subscribe to the show. Okay, Deep Fried fans, grab that glass of sweet tea and get ready for some Gumpology.
Live from the PDC floor, we're sitting here with a bunch of crazy guys.
Bunch of geeks. Uh-oh. Look who just walked up. Oh, no.
We're just doing a little podcasting here at the show. We got all the podcasters that we could round up on Thursday. Who we got here? We got Scott Kuhn from Herding Code. We got John Galloway from Herding Code as well. Jeff Atwood from Stack Overflow. And myself, Keith Elder, and then Chris Woody Man Woodruff. What's up, guys?
Join the PDC.
Staying awake.
That was a cool party last night.
The best part for me was watching the Mono guys play.
Rock band,
yes.
Yeah, so did you guys hear the announcement in London that came out today? Apple have agreed. So Beatles music on Rock Band will be coming out shortly. They didn't say when. I didn't see it anything, but... Also, you might be able to buy Beatles tunes on iTunes, so it's kind of cool. Being a Beatles fan.
You know where you should go to find out more information about that? You should go to this really good blog called fakeplasticrock.com that I heard about that some really cool guy put together and actually has the full press release and some commentary about that.
Oh.
So, yeah, if you're curious, you might want to go to that website. I just heard it's really awesome.
Yeah. Yeah, we'll figure that one out.
But that is big news, obviously, being a giant, fake plastic rock fan, Rock Band and Guitar Hero, so, yeah.
I know you are. We keep hearing every time we hear Stack Overflow, you're always talking about Rock Band and what new songs you're downloading. So what's your new favorite Rock Band song that you
downloaded? I have
downloaded?
Some embarrassing preferences that I probably shouldn't admit in public. But I will say that so the Beatles was huge news. That's probably the biggest rhythm game news ever because they're actually still not on iTunes. This is only covering.
They've never been digital anywhere.
So literally, if you buy the game, that would be the only way to get their music legally digitally still, which is kind of surprising, right? It's like, well, why not just go to iTunes or whatever? So AC/DC was the other big announcement. That's November 2nd. That's sort of their greatest hits. It's a live show that they're putting in the game, but it's all the songs you would expect to be in the game. It's like 18 or 20 songs of really cool AC/DC stuff. So that was the big news with regards to music.
But talking about PDC, what's your kind of biggest excitement coming out of PDC? What do you think is going to affect our lives the most for software developers?
Well, I think I'm a big fan of developer division, like Microsoft's developer division. I mean, I grew up with, you know, AppleSoft Basic and Amiga AppleSoft Basic, and all the basic variants that I know were from Microsoft. So I feel like that's a fine legacy that they have of really sort of kicking butt in the development space. Like, certainly .NET was huge, and they continue to evolve it really rapidly and add really cool, useful new features. Like, I know a lot of people are excited about C# 4.0, although I think Miguel de Casa was sort of jealous that, you know, Anders was getting all the spotlight. Because they have some cool stuff in Mono that they're doing that are kind of showing the future of C# before, you know, Microsoft is. So Microsoft continues to evolve the language. That's probably, to me, the most important, you know, outcome of the show. And then also the cloud stuff, I don't know. I have a hard time getting excited about that personally. I mean, it's just server stuff is not that sexy to me. People are probably going to get angry hearing this, but it's cool, but it's just not sexy. To me, what's sexy is like, okay, they need a version of Windows that people actually want to install, right?
Yes.
Like kind of like Office 2007, where it's like, wow, this is actually a really nice upgrade. Like they really put a lot of work into the UI and thought about how can we make this better, and people could visibly see why it was better. Whereas with Vista, people really can't see why they should buy it. You know, and I had to talk to, you know, Joel Spolsky, and Joel's like, yeah, I don't really see anything in Vista worth using. I'm like, well, really, there's a bunch of really cool little things, but there's not anything visually obvious that makes it look
sexy.
It's not
that groundbreaking
awesome
thing that's in there, you know?
Yeah, there's got to be just a couple
sexy things. I mean, there was glass, but that arrow and glass, but you know what? That I didn't think that that pushed it too far ahead.
Flip 3D. Flip 3D is the reason to get Vista.
Yeah, and that's like a downside. Look, Flip 3D is actually like not useful, right? So, yeah, to me it was like, okay, the two things are just dev kicking butt, moving the language forward, all the different related tools that are coming online, and then just Windows 7 being sexy and like something worth upgrading to. I mean, they got to do that. That's a core competency, operating systems. I mean, they got to bring back the mojo there.
Yeah,
so
I mean,
the second kind of part to the dev story is the accessibility, I think, that we've had here. With Ask the Experts, I mean, you get to talk to Raymond Chen, ask him a question. Larry Osterman, who's been there for 25 years, was taking questions. All the ASP.NET team, Phil Hack, was doing MVC, had an MVC table. Scott Gu showed up for an open space and then hung around afterwards with little, you know, people trailing after him asking questions, and, you know, didn't run off, didn't say, I can't make it, I got to go. You know, and to get that kind of level to an executive, you know, VP, is you know, kind of unheard of in other areas.
Well, exactly. I mean, you just walk around, and right here I see Phil Hack was over here. I see Charlie Calvert, who's on the C-sharp compiler team.
There's Chris on the F-sharp team.
Yeah, I see Sarah Ford from CodePlex. I mean, it's just amazing the people that you just bump into. You turn around and there's somebody else, and you turn around and there's somebody else, and you find that they're just decent people that you can talk to, and they're here to answer questions. And
probably the most thing is they're trying to get feedback to figure out really where they want to take stuff to, you know. We've talked to a lot of people from Microsoft this week on doing several shows, and they were always saying, send us feedback, connect with us, go to the forums, tell us what's wrong. And that's not 10, 15 years ago, you would never get that story, basically.
I think, too, what's good for them is that, you know, a lot of the time people love things or hate things, but a lot of times if you just kind of dislike something, you just kind of see, then you don't actually tell anyone. So I think the conversations that come up here where you're talking face-to-face, say, how do you like that? Well, I kind of like it. Well, what could be better? And I think that's really the kind of thing that comes up out of these sort of conversations, you know.
You know, something I like was, I really like Mesh. I don't have you guys played with it much at all? No, we actually use it to transfer, you know, our files for our podcast back and forth. So we just have a share, and we just drop the file there, and it eventually goes and gets synced up. So we don't have to like FTP and, you know, all that kind of stuff. And you know, having the mobile phone stuff that just came out today, so I can take a picture and now it just shows up on my desktop. That's pretty cool. I don't have to, like, you know, plug the phone up anymore and get the USB cable out, so I can like take a picture and then blog like within seconds probably.
So one other thing I thought was interesting about all the Mesh demos and other live services demos is the apparent death of SOAP.
That is kind of stack. Yeah. A lot of rest. Yeah.
Just Mesh in general, I like it, but the way it works, you only get a certain amount of space, and it's all stored on a server as opposed to like a peer-to-peer system like file share.
I read a blog from Jeff Blankenberg, and he said, like, once you go over the 5 gig limit that's there, it actually goes peer to peer.
Oh, well, I'm in then. I had not used it because I thought that five gig.
Yeah,
limit was kind
he
of a
said like on his post, he just posted it like the other day, and he was talking about like the 5 gig limit. And he said once you go over that, like he's got 70 gigs of music or 80 gigs of music, but as you put stuff on there, it will just go peer to peer and then replicate that stuff out. But it's not a very known feature. So, I mean, we can check into it and see. But yeah.
So one other thing that I think is huge coming out of this, and I don't think I'm the only one, is the managed extensibility framework. It got showcased in Scott Guthrie's keynote. They had a repeat of Glenn Block's session, and they've just been showing it in lots of different places. I asked the Explorer the shell team last night if it was going to be in, you know, the shell, if we could replace, you know, or add a, extend a Explorer, the shell. And they said, no, it's all native. We won't get that there. But I think it'll be making its way into lots of other parts of the OS and applications, and it's going to make developing these kinds of extensibility solutions a lot easier.
Are you saying you don't like C++? Is that what I'm hearing?
I'm saying
you're not a real developer. You don't want to C++. You're not hardcore.
Yeah.
That's what I'm hearing.
See, when they have a session called NoPIA, no primary interop assemblies, I think no one likes C++.
Right. Well, that's true. We're not talking about just C++, which is a ball of, you know, worms all by itself, but just the fact that, you know, COM and all the COM old school craziness that you get into with the classic Windows dev. So, yeah, I hear you.
That's one thing that I was hoping to hear more on the Windows side. Windows 7, like, they had some really cool features they're showing off, but from everything I've heard, everything's still, you're right, in C++ if you want to take advantage of it. You know, they may...
Well, it's because you're a real developer.
Right.
Right.
But I'm not.
Yeah, and you're not. You're clearly, no, yes. You're not a real developer.
So I think that's just, I mean, that kind of cut down on some of my excitement about, as a developer, about some of these new Windows 7 features. I mean, the controls and WPF are adding some more support for them, but just... The way that there's kind of like this .NET happy land, and then there's the Windows shell, and the two like haven't met up yet, unfortunately.
Right. Well, along those same lines, did anyone go to any of the IE8 stuff? You might have. No?
Nope. I didn't, no.
Oh, that's a bummer. Because I keep hearing rumblings that Google Chrome caused them to reboot that development a little bit.
Like, really? Wow.
That's what I heard from somebody whose opinion that I trust who would know. that the appearance of Google Chrome made Microsoft realize they need to get really serious about the browser in a way that they haven't been really before.
I mean, Google Chrome shipped after IE8 Beta 2, so I'm not sure what you're saying since then.
That's what I heard. It could be completely wrong. I mean, it's just a rumor. So, but based on the source, it should have some credibility, but I don't know. I mean, I would love to see that because one of the biggest disappointments for me has been obviously... I feel like Microsoft is getting really far behind in the browser race now. IE8 is, you know, it's the same thing with IE7. It's too little, too late, and it's better, which is good. It's progress, right? I mean, don't get me wrong. They're moving forward, which is important, but they need to be so much more aggressive. I think the browser is like the premier application for any operating system. Like, it's your flagship app. And if you do not treat it that way, you're screwed.
I stopped by the IE8 booth, and I was asking them things about, you know, so what are you going to do? Are you jitting? You know, I've seen some JavaScript engine, you know, performance increases. Are you going to be jitting? Well, no, we don't really know if we're going to. They were kind of evasive and they weren't real confident in the product. And I kind of sensed that, you know, maybe there's been some changes going on there. But
hopefully.
So they're kind of in this weird situation where they're trying to push Silverlight inside and now outside of the browser. But at the same time, they've got, you know, everyone is moving to, you know, JavaScript, HTML applications, the rich web applications. So, you know, do they continue down the Silverlight path, or do they beef up IE, or does IE just become a shell for Silverlight at some point?
Well, I think, I mean, realistically, hopefully it's all of the above, right? I mean, like, I don't think anyone expects, and you talk to, like, Scott Guthrie, they're not expecting that Silverlight is going to replace the web. I don't think anyone really expects that, but... So the idea is you want Silverlight to be great where you want that kind of rich application and also that's going to work cross-browser and all that kind of thing. And then hopefully do more, you know, not just because it's easier to develop for, but because it has, like, rich support for vectors and things like that that, you know, is going to work everywhere. And but then on the browser side, too, they've got to keep up with that, like Google Chrome is clearly an application platform in a way that IE8 isn't yet.
What's the story on the Silverlight thing, though? Like, Al, because Guthrie mentioned it during the keynote, but it never became like a thing.
Yeah. I don't know if there's any official word on it. And I think, from what I understand, he kind of said, like, and why wouldn't Silverlight run outside the browser? So it wasn't really any kind of like, and we commit by this release date that we will do this or that. And I'd hope to ask him at the open spaces, and I didn't get a chance. I did talk to other Silverlight people, and they were kind of like, yeah, some of that was a little surprising. We're kind of all figuring out what exactly that means. So I'm not sure. People have done these hacks, you know, where it's basically like a browser host running on the local server, or, you know, like running a local browser. So it would be great to see a managed version, or, you know, see an official shipped version of that.
What is the attraction, though? I kind of don't get that because, you know, we have do you have Flash running outside the browser, and that's just kind of been a flop so far. So why would this be any different?
I think one big thing is that I could run .NET code on a Mac pretty easily. I mean, there's Mono, but this is, you know, and also the delivery is simple. I think another thing, WPF is nice, but it is huge. It's totally overwhelming to just jump into WPF. But Silverlight is this kind of, you know, smaller toolbox, and you can build an application in the small toolbox that's going to work on, you know, work everywhere. So I think that, but I mean, developing for a Mac, that's kind of nice, you know.
And yeah, but I got the impression that, I mean, I haven't looked at it in a while, but with Silverlight 2, like, there was a big lack of, like, sort of canned controls. Has that been totally
fixed
now?
Yeah, that's all changed. I mean, I think that's changed from the third party and from Microsoft. I mean, I was walking around a lot of the vendors and looking at their Silverlight controls and WPF controls and everything. So
this week especially, that's changed because they announced some new controls with Silverlight 2 that, you know, Silverlight 2, when it shipped, came out with a lot of controls. Plus, there's this Silverlight control toolkit, and it's run by Sean Burke, who did the ASP Ajax control toolkit. And those controls, I got to play with them before they shipped. But it's a CTP on CodePlex, and they're really nice. I mean, they're really well put together. And they're not released to CodePlex because we don't really care about them that much. They're released to CodePlex to allow, you know, the Mono team to use them, to allow anybody to use them and really dig in and contribute and see all this, you know, use that source code. So
the cynic in me kind of looks at that and says it only took them a year to get a date picker control in Silverlight.
Yeah. Well, I think that a lot of it was they built up this control system, you know, like the controls have states, and they went through several different iterations of how the controls actually function. So now, once that's built out, I've built controls in the past few weeks, and it goes pretty quickly. You know what I mean? So they had to build the infrastructure, and now it's all kind of set. And what's nice is that the way these controls work is simpler than the way WPF controls worked before. So that's rolling back into WPF land now, too. They're sharing the simplicity of that.
I hate to be negative again, but I got to say I'm not really feeling it, because I think the attraction for being on a Mac, if you're going to run, you know, native executable or something that's an executable, not a website, is that it would be really tailored to the platform. And it's kind of like you have the Java problem there. It's the least common denominator.
I don't think that's necessary. Okay, like, I don't think that's necessarily true. I don't think the only benefit of an application is that it's tailored for that platform. I mean, if I write a simple, you know, you love like regex buddy or something like that, right? Why shouldn't that run on a Mac? Why, you know? And so I don't think that the only benefit over a web app is that I'm running something that takes advantage of my specific OS. I think there's just some benefits of, I can save files, I can, you know, print, I mean, just do things that are done better than outside of a browser.
So I think the question there is, who's going to be running .NET code on a Mac, you know, Silverlight code on a Mac first, Mono or Microsoft?
Yeah.
Yeah, well, that's going to be, well, we've already seen on the iPhone. So we saw Miguel running a C# application on an iPhone, an unhacked.
That was great.
iPhone.
Yeah, that was incredible.
Yeah, that was a cool demo. Hopefully everybody can listening to this can watch it online. It was really cool.
I thought that it was really cool. Like the way that he explained that iPhone has a hardware restriction that prevents JITted code. You can't execute a data page as an executable. And what they've done, they've got a static linker, so they're able to build an EXE and drop it on the iPhone, and it runs. So it's all legit above board. And then now they support also, you know, Wii, and they're moving on to these other platforms as an official game development platform. And
yeah, the linker was cool. Being able to just, you know, statically link to namespaces in the framework and pull them down. That was very, very cool.
So my biggest disappointment here is there's no news on the mobile front. I mean, there's nothing about a new mobile browser. There's nothing about mobile 7.
Well, how could it get any better? It's already so good. I mean, that's my point.
Yeah, it's so wonderful. Yeah,
it's really, really good right now. So I think they probably feel like it's so good that they just literally have nothing to do. You know, there's
no
nothing to announce. There's
that.
No way to get for it to get better.
Yeah, they're
really.
So far ahead. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, they're
sarcasm.
Just kicking everybody's butt.
Sarcasm. So, but
I feel you.
But no, I mean, I came to PDC hoping knowing that, that Windows 7 was going to at least be another 12 to 18 months down the road, but at least maybe seeing something. And it's dead quiet around here on the mobile front. It's almost like...
Well, it's kind of like the Zune thing, right? It's like there's just dead silence. It's weird. Microsoft, sometimes they're very vocal about, okay, here's what we're going to do, and here's what's the future. Sometimes they're just like really secretive. It's like they've become Apple. You know, it's like weird. And it's very selective in what division you're talking about.
Yeah, take the Azure, because we actually interviewed somebody from there, and they were like, nobody knew. All of the slide decks had like this fake code name on them, and they went in right before the keynote. I actually put the actual real name in, and Steve said, I want to give you my business card, and you'll see that it doesn't even have...
It was naked.
I have nothing. It was just his name, and there was like no title, there was no division, there was no nothing.
Wow. Just had a that Microsoft
like an
logo
Apple
on it.
Thing,
yeah.
Right? Yeah,
that's true. That's true. There wasn't a lot of leaks about that, was there?
No, but you bring up another point, Zune. I mean, I understand this is a developer conference, but I mean, looking at all these people walking around with iPods and iPhones, I mean, it's got to be a slap in the face to Microsoft in some level.
Well, you know how Microsoft is. They have to see competition. Like, they have to see inroads before they get off their butts and actually start doing things. So
I think they're starting to. But I think they're not leveraging the whole developer side to it, right? I mean, Zune, you can go in and write an XNA game on your Zune, and if you've got Visual Studio installed, deploy it onto your Zune.
But did they have a session here about it?
No.
No.
And they don't have any official way of delivering. Well, this is their other problem. They don't have any way of delivering content to end users, you know? So, like, on a Zune, I'm sure eventually it'll get on Zune Marketplace or whatever, but they don't have that whole iTunes-y, you know, iPhone app store or whatever kind of delivery system.
Wasn't there like an announcement that they were actually building like the iPhone store where you can go in and buy apps back a month or so ago?
I remember reading something like
that. On that where they're going to build that. I was kind of expecting to see that come out at PDC and then say, hey, developers, you can now write, you know, a mobile app and upload it to, you know, here and then do it that way. That's kind of what I was expecting to see at PDC, just to be honest. I mean, not anything new on the device front or like the operating system, but just that.
Well, going back to the, you know, this kind of being a developer-oriented conference, I was really surprised by the keynote on day two, where we got 20 minutes of how great the PC is and how a viable platform, and I kind of sat there and I thought, you know, aren't we we're sold. We're developers.
Yeah, we're here.
We're writing web apps. We're writing desktop apps. We're writing mobile apps. Why are you telling us?
But they were kind
of
making
fun of
themselves, though. Like during the keynote, like there were some little underlying funny tones there. You know.
Yeah. Well, there's some unintentionally funny tones there too. But.
Yeah.
Every keynote is like that. Did they have a video this year of the parody video?
No.
They didn't do one?
No.
Every year they do that, and it's so fun.
You know, just to interrupt. Scott Guthrie doesn't do that. Scott Guthrie doesn't talk down to everybody and like, here's the internet. The internet is this cloud and here's all, and then the PowerPoints with the like 1982 style computers and the little lightning bolts coming out of the clouds to the computer. Like, I think that I'm not sure exactly where they think we're at, but when you hear keynotes from top level Microsoft executives talking to us, it's kind of like they feel like they need to explain some things that I think they don't.
Well, to be fair, there are multiple audiences. Like, there's articles in the Wall Street Journal about this stuff, and those guys aren't developers, right?
But even the Wall Street Journal doesn't need to hear that the internet is a viable platform.
Well, I think it's just there's a couple audiences, and I think you're right. It's kind of annoying because as developers, we know all that stuff. But, you know, there's just CEO talk that you have to do. I have a certain level of tolerance for it because it's just that's just their job to talk to sort of the shareholders and that sort of thing, and they have to be careful
what they
say.
It just felt more like a press conference. Than a keynote.
But in a sense, it kind of is, a little bit.
Yeah, so, you know, yeah.
What are you
going to
do?
Not
yeah, maybe have a separate thing.
Yeah.
Maybe that's the point. It's like, have a separate event. This is the press event. Because at the keynote, all the people in front, those are all press seats. They're all reserved for press, right? So maybe just have a separate event for those guys and then get the hardcore dev stuff out of the way.
I guess out of four keynotes, I felt like there was an hour and a half of real useful information. I mean, I don't want to be harsh about it, but it's like, I do feel like that. They could have had an introductory 101 session, you know, where they say that the clouds are good for us and then, you know, get to the point. And I felt like in the first keynote, there was a lot of talking and a lot of PowerPoints and a lot of fluffy talk and not a whole lot of, like,
demos. You know?
Yeah, yeah, exactly, which is what, that's why everyone comes, I mean, everyone loves Scott Guthrie, but partly because when he gets on stage, cool stuff happens.
Yeah,
you know?
He starts hitting the keyboard. Yeah.
He starts dropping code and hitting it, and he's just like a whirlwind of information. And you're trying to, okay, he did this, he went there, I got to do this. And, you know, I mean, it's not sugar-coated and fluffed. You know?
Yeah,
you got the fluffers on stage, then you bring out the other guy, you know. I mean, to me...
That's a disturbing analogy, but please proceed.
Well, it's... I guess it is, yeah. But, I mean, you spent, you know, geez, how long did we talk about the problem before they actually showed the Windows 7, you know, stuff? And they you know, we only saw, like, Scott was the only guy that really did code, I think, in that whole keynote. And what he showed was extremely cool. I was watching a clock going, okay, this is supposed to end, and we've only just seen this little bit here. Where's the good stuff, you know?
And I think Scott Guthrie was the only one who got a really, really long round of applause, too, and a lot of genuine applause.
Well, we were on Twitter. You started it, and then I jumped in, but you never stood up.
I did. I stood up. I was only one in the entire back of the auditorium standing up when he came out. We tried to start a standing ovation for Scott Guthrie when he came out.
We're Twittering that.
Yeah, we're Twittering
it never
live.
Happened.
Like,
well, it actually sounded like sounded like when they just got the little bit of applause. It was always coming from the same area in the room.
Like,
and
they were plants.
The back. It was always the back towards the doors. Because it just felt kind of contrived.
And there
some
were a lot of
the,
times
some
where
of the clapping.
There were a lot of times during the keynote where, like, you could actually see, like, they're actually reading the word applause and, like, wait for it, and then nobody did anything.
And no one,
And then there were other times that, like, you know, they were, like, kind of shocked that people were actually, you know, clapping, because that was really cool. Like the remote desktop on multiple screens. Everybody's like, we love that. That's great. Clap, 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 clap.
Or when the big thing about Guthrie's demo was it not only showed, you know, something that was very stylistic and looked nice, but it was also functional because, you know, you can get in there, you can see the bugs that it fixed, and then you can click on it and bring up the defect while you're in the code window instead of having to jump out to the, you know, Team Explorer or whatever and
that was awesome.
Drill through your queries. Yeah, it was very, very cool.
So I have to ask, Jeff, I mean, what did you take away from here that you think you can bring into Stack Overflow over the next year? Was there any interesting point?
That's not really how I approach these kind of conferences. Actually, events like it's all about people, right? It's about, like you were talking about, meeting the people at Microsoft that are here doing really cool stuff. They're really enthusiastic about it. They love writing code and they love building cool stuff just like you do. And it's just, I think it's about meeting your peers and hearing what they're doing on a one-to-one basis, and less so than, say, the keynote, which is very canned content. And, you know, you could go on the web and sort of get the same information. So I think maybe that's not really the way I look at these conferences. It's just an opportunity to meet other cool programmers doing cool stuff in a, you know, like almost like a college type environment where everybody's doing cool stuff.
No, I agree. I mean, I haven't been to one session. I mean, the only session I wanted to go to was Miguel's.
Yep.
And I didn't get to it because we were kind of winding up getting the last podcast done yesterday, and we just didn't have time. But I'm going to watch it.
A lot of people come to conferences, and they'll set their schedule, and they're like blog posts. You know, everybody's like, here's my schedule. This is all I'm doing. I go and sit in the expo and hang out and talk and just wait for people to roll by, and it's a social thing. I can go look at the videos in the morning while I'm watching, you know, checking email and drinking coffee. That's exactly it.
I was looking at my schedule and what I could do, and then, you know, all these sessions are recorded. Everything's available later. So, you know, with the exception of open spaces, thinking, well, I'll catch all this stuff next week, you know.
So just so everybody knows, Kevin Dente from Herding Code just finally came over. We called him. He was running around, so he finally joined us. Kevin?
I was in one of those sessions that nobody else seems to be attending.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Kevin's
one
of those guys. He goes to all the sessions. What a loser. Going to the sessions? Who does that?
Yeah. So, I mean, going back to the sessions, like yesterday, Alan Stevens just grabbed Dustin Campbell and said, you know, teach me about closures. And this was in the open space. And it was just me and Alan sitting there. And then Phil came by and a couple other people came by. And pretty soon we had 27 people up there talking about, you know, functional programming and C-sharp, and we were doing it in multiple languages, and F-sharp, C-sharp, and JavaScript, and then Iron Ruby dev came by and did it in Ruby, and And, you know, it just evolved into this thing that was very cool and very informative, and I learned a lot. I learned more in that, like, 20 minutes of talking with that group than I have, you know, being reading bullet points on PowerPoints in some of these sessions.
Right. No, that's a great point. And I think that's an excellent example of why you should come to a conference like this. I feel like we've said a lot of negative things about the conference. I feel a little bad because there is a lot of value here. It's just a question of how you do it. And I think it's a variety of things. I mean, I do go to some sessions, and then there's just a lot of ad hoc meeting other developers doing cool stuff that's incredibly valuable. And I would really encourage everyone to, you know, make sure they do that if they come to a conference like this. Like, go out of your way to talk to other developers and see what they're doing.
Yeah, just meet. I mean, I sat next to a guy on the bus last night going back to the hotel, and he worked for Microsoft. So we had a cool conversation for about 20 minutes going back to the hotel, and, you know, I got his card and probably will chat with him more. I mean, that's the thing. I mean, you meet all these cool people that, you know, I follow and I get followed on Twitter, but until you meet face to face, there isn't that connection that
Yeah, I've met people together. Met people that I didn't even know were following me, and they came up and said, "Oh, I know you. I know." And I'm, "Really? All right, cool. Let's talk." And plus, I found a different side effect to coming to these kinds of things. I just realized this a little while ago. So I'm now 4 degrees of separation from mini me. Because I know Dustin. Dustin knows Mark Miller. Mark knows Vern now. So he did a demo at the Dev Express booth. That was very bizarre.
So I know Mark, so I got you beat then. Right, I got you beat. Mini-Me was extremely... Actually, Mini-Me is a smaller version of John Galloway, if you've ever seen him before.
I think Mini-Me is more like John. So.
I think they're related. We're talking about that last night at the party. I mean, but he was extreme. I couldn't believe how small he was. I mean, he was extremely... Oh. He was in a little baby chair thing. It's crazy.
One thing that's been interesting for me is that, you know, a lot of the people here are not the most naturally social people that you'll run into. Because of Twitter, you know, there are people that I have in some sense already have some social context around. So that has been like a real sort of lube to grease the social experience, so to speak.
Oh, Twitter has totally changed the game.
Yeah, let me rephrase that.
Twitter has really changed the game. Like, literally, you know, like all of us are following each other on Twitter and stuff. And it's like, well, I wonder where so and so is. Well, they're Twittering. They're over here at this place or going to this session. And we were sitting outside because we didn't want to go to a session. We were out there talking to some people. And I'm just pulling up Twitter and searching for PDC tags. And I'm actually watching 4 or 5 different sessions at the same time, looking at all the PDC tags coming out. And so I'm actually learning C# 4.0 features from Twitter.
That was interesting from the point of view of the website. I worked on the Microsoft PDC website, and we made sure we really were, like, I was excited about that. And also the experienced designer David Chadle, who is famous for creating the Channel 9 guy, among other things, and he really wanted to get that in there too. So we had the video and the Twitter thing side by side, so you could watch the reaction. And they were sitting there in the Channel 9 room, like, things are going up. Oh, they're not liking this. I mean, there's a lot of, you know, like, I mean, not like, you know, going for the polls, but just, you know, like gauging feedback and seeing what people like and don't like. I think that was really cool.
There were a couple of times yesterday I asked people who were following me on Twitter. I said, do you have any questions that you want me to ask while I'm here at the PDC? I can walk right over to, you know, a dev lead on the compiler team, and I can ask him whatever you want, and I'll just Twitter it back to you. And I answered a couple of questions. I had people saying, you know, well, ask Phil about this, you know, on MVC, and ask the compiler guys about this, and when is this going to be released? And I'd go over and ask them and Twitter it back or DM them, and it was great because then they get to, you know, they get the some of the benefit of my being here, you know, and I get some of the benefit of finding out questions to ask and learning new things.
We can't forget to mention not at PDC. You know, as well.
Yeah, I was about to say that whoever started that, I don't know who actually started it, but it was amazing. I mean, they
Chris Love and Rachel Apple, I think, started that.
And I was like following that on Twitter, and I'm like, that's a cool session that they're doing.
We were Twittering so much on the tags for PDC, like Sunday, you know, and everybody's going to party with Palermo, and, you know, and everybody's here, and I'm going here, and I'm there. And there was so much PDC traffic coming from Twitter that the people that didn't get to go, some people in all like the East Coast and stuff, said, okay, we've had enough. We're going to make our own tag, you know, not at, pound not at PDC on Twitter, and they've been having keynotes and sessions all week, and people have been, you know, Twittering, well, I'm speaking at not at PDC today in my session, and nobody showed up, and it's just been like this other thing that's kind of taken a life of its own.
Yeah, that's the important thing to notice, that not it's not just like a little bitch fest on there or a complaint fest on there. It's they've actually been uploading PowerPoints, and people have been getting on live meeting and giving sessions that either mirror some of the sessions at PDC or, you know, supplement, let's say. So they had one on jQuery. They had one on Silverlight 2, and Johnny Stockton, he's been working with Silverlight 2 directly at Microsoft.
Yeah,
Microsoft. So, you know, he's probably getting the same kind of content that they're getting here.
So, Scott, are you saying that people on the internet are actually doing something constructive rather than just complaining?
Well, no.
The same internet that I know.
I think there were some lolcats involved, though.
Yeah. No, that's awesome. I mean, I think that's great. That's the entire point. It's like, if you're going to be critical, like, oh, this is annoying, it's like, well, do something about it. And they did something about it. That's great. That's wonderful.
And I think that that MSDN are going to be hosting a lot of MSDN conferences. So, like, they're like mini PDCs is the way I've heard them branded.
Yeah, so I'm kind of involved in that. So those start in the beginning of December, and they go to the end of January. It's like 12 cities. They're going to take about 12 sessions from here, redo them in every city. They're going to have open spaces, which is really a huge success here. And they're going to do open spaces at each one of these MSDN developer conferences. I mean, it's going to cost a little bit of money, which I kind of have an idea it may fail because of that, but we'll see.
How much money are we talking about?
$99.
That's
for a day.
Pretty reasonable.
That is, but you got to remember in the economy,
I mean, PDC is what, $2,500?
$2,500, and you get some swag.
Yeah.
I mean, there is some swag that you get, and so, and there'll be a lot of, they're going to try to bring in a lot of local community influencers to each city. So you're going to have, you're not going to have like a John Lamb and a Phil Hack, but I mean, you'll get a lot of people, their influencers around that city will be coming in.
Right. So you can only afford people like Kevin Dente, like the D list.
Sure.
Basically.
Yeah.
We might get a John Lamb and a Phil Hack if they have it in Seattle.
That's true. Yeah.
Sorry,
location
guys.
Location does matter. That is true.
Location
That's a good point.
Does. I mean, I'm going to be working in the Detroit and Chicago. So I mean, may not have the big names, but they are going to send Redmond people out to each event to do some of the talks and to do the keynote.
But like, you know, like awesome. in Detroit and Chicago, you'll get like Bill Wagner, who's wrote the Effective C# book. He's a regional director. The man knows his stuff, so it's not like they're cheating you. They're giving you just somebody else as a replacement that can tell you everything about C# 4.0 and the features. And what Bill will do is something that you know they want, which is say, this is how you will use it when you go sit back in your cube, kind of a story. And so you'll get a different little flavor, too. So that's a good thing. Well, folks, that's all we got from live from PDC with the Podcaster Roundtable. That was pretty fun, huh, Woody?
Yeah, that was a blast. It was good to get to know and kind of bounce ideas and see how everyone kind of thought of the conference.
Yeah, it was fun. Those are some great guys. They're good friends of ours. They're also fellow podcasters. And it was great to sort of get everybody together. We actually wanted to get a few more, but it was sort of late Thursday by the time everybody had a chance to get together. And Hanselman was going to join us, but he had already took a flight back. We were going to get the guys from Thirsty Developer on as well, Larry and Dave, but they actually were out of pocket as well. So maybe next time we can get another podcaster roundtable going and get some more people in there. So,
yeah, we will. We'll get everyone next time. So,
absolutely. Well, folks, this is ending the part one of the conversation. Now, to get part two, if you didn't listen to Ellie Mae earlier from what she told you, to get part two of this conversation, just head over to Herding Code's website. We actually split this up into two separate parts. So part one was here on Deep Fried first, and you go over to Herding Code and check out episode 25 on their site, and that will give you part two of this exact same conversation. Well, Woody, we've got a lot of great shows lined up that we recorded at PDC. We recorded about, what, 9 or 10 shows? Something like that?
Yeah, something like that. 8 to 10, including this one that we just listened to.
So for those that haven't actually checked out our website lately, go out there. We actually have some pictures that that we got from some people took of us actually recording live in the expo. So you can kind of see sort of our setup, you know, with our microphones and all of that kind of stuff. And that was really fun. And we got some really great shows lined up that we actually got a hold of a lot of the product teams at Microsoft. We're going to be covering things like Azure, SQL Services. What else? What do you, I'm drawing a blank here.
Oh, we've got F-Sharp, some other programming stuff. We have the Microsoft's Performance Wizard.
Rico.
Yeah.
Yeah,
Rico.
He was great. He was great. That's going to be a great show.
Yeah, he was good. So, but you know what? We just got a lot of kind of a broad overview of all the new stuff that's coming out of Microsoft from PDC.
Absolutely. So y'all stay tuned for that. Well, folks, that'll do it for episode number 18. We certainly hope you enjoyed it. As always, you can reach us at comments@deepfriedbytes.com via email if you have any questions or queries or posers for us. And you can reach us on Twitter at twitter.com/deepfriedbytes. Woody, I enjoyed it, sir. Great talking to you again.
Yep, me too. Me too.
Until next time, folks, we'll see you.
Bye-bye.